Good afternoon to you. Welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. If you are listening to this right now, and you are within about a 30-mile drive of Greenville, you need to get down to the Greenville Downtown Airport because the Collings Foundation has their B-24 Liberator and B-17 Flying Fortress sitting out there near the Runway Cafe. You can take a tour, walk-through tour. The P-51 is not here at the moment. I think it's, from what the guy at the airport said, that he got stuck in Burlington, West Virginia by weather, and they're hoping to have him in here late this evening or tomorrow. But anyway, there was a bunch of people. I just rode by there just to make sure they were there. I'm going to try to get out there tomorrow afternoon. But a lot of people, living history, as it was back in the, World War II days. These airplanes were not comfy and cozy. Even if we don't think airliners are comfy and cozy, these things were a lot more sparse and, whatever temperature it was outside was what it was inside. Go take a look. I think it's $12 for an adult, $6 for kids under a certain age, maybe 6, 7. A good history lesson, if nothing more. But anyway, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz. I'll be with you for the next hour. It's been a busy few weeks. Wow. Been a lot of places, seen a lot of things, done a lot of things. I spent yesterday down on Lake Hartwell. Well, I was on Lake Hartwell part of the day and in Anderson the other part of the day. For the American Bass Association's American Fishing Tour Championships, won by, yes, another South Carolinian, Andy Wicker. Andy's going to be with us at the bottom of the hour to talk about it. I tell you what, if you bring a bass fishing championship to South Carolina, be prepared to get run over by our anglers. We have some good bass fishermen out there, and they are just winning everything here in the state. So, hey, congratulations to Andy. He's got an interesting, a pretty good story. I think you'll enjoy it. Personal young man. Didn't get out on the water at all, but I did get to watch the launch from the ladder of the fire truck. I don't know how high we were, but we were up there a ways. It was really neat. Got some cool pictures, which I'll be putting up here shortly as soon as I have some time to go to edit pictures. excuse me. Let's still battle in this cold, which is a thing that just will not go away. Of course, if I slowed down a little bit, maybe it would. We haven't done the calendar for a few weeks, so let's get a few things out there that you can go see and do across the state here this week and next week. I think I'm going to change this a little bit starting next year with the calendar, and I think it will be probably more beneficial to you. I'm still working on how to exactly handle it, but we'll roll that out as we get closer to next year. Next year, wow, it is only like 2 months away. Yikes. And hey, fall is here. The leaves are turning. I looked at the leaf fall forecast, and they were saying, oh, it's still a bunch of green up in North Carolina and all. I look around out here, just even outside the studio, and see a lot of color. So, just when it's like deer hunting. When you have the time to go, just go. Don't wait for the perfect time because it's not going to be all the – anyway, I'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, with leaf season, just go. Just drive to the mountains, take your family, get out, find a trail to walk along a creek somewhere, and enjoy being outside. This is the time of the year we all live for. Leaf season, cool temperatures. Get out and enjoy it. But back to the calendar of events. This is the second year they've done this. The East Cooper Ducks Unlimited Shucking on the Yorktown is going to take place this Friday night, October the 30th. 6 to 10 p.m. on the aircraft carrier Yorktown there in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. If you haven't seen the Yorktown, you haven't been on it, what an excuse to go eat some oysters. Although, our South Carolina oyster season has been closed since the rains and the floods and all, and I have an article about this I'll share with you later. So you're probably eating oysters from the Northeast or maybe Apalachicola. They're still good oysters, but just not going to get the South Carolina ones. Tickets, $60. You can still buy tickets up till the 29th. And it says second annual Shucking on the Yorktown hosted by East Cooper Ducks Unlimited, top 1% chapter in the world. It's the second annual on the flight deck of the Yorktown. Enjoy the finest local oysters. Like I said, that won't happen. The feast on a top shelf low country cookout on the hangar deck from 7:30 to 10:30. Ticket includes cocktails, live music, and they've got an up and coming Nashville band's going to be there. And of course, the live auction, silent auctions to help waterfowl here in South Carolina. And the duck migration is on. If you go to the Ducks Unlimited website, ducks.org, you can check out and see where ducks are starting to show up. There's actually some reports here around the southeast. Of course, you know, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, they're just covered up with ducks already. More information on those and other events for Ducks Unlimited is www.ducks.org. Hook and Cook, the town of Jackson's annual festival, October 30th through the 31st. It's the 8th annual Hook and Cook Festival. Town of Jackson, in partnership with Red Cliff Elementary School, invites you to the 8th annual festival at the Jackson Community Center Pavilion on Main Street. They're going to have a dessert competition. They're going to have a band, Palmetto Groove Party Band, performs Friday night. And the South Carolina Barbecue Association is going to have a sanctioned cook-off there Saturday. Of course, Friday night, they always have something that is kind of off the menu, and then Saturday will be their barbecue. They also will have a fishing tournament. It's on Saturday, begins at safe daylight. The weigh-in at 3 o'clock, entry fee is $50 per boat and an optional big fish pot of $10. Tournament has four categories, panfish, bass, striper, hybrid, and catfish. Barbecue, pork, and chicken dinners will be sold beginning at 11 a.m. until sold out. And, of course, they're going to have some Halloween information, Halloween celebrations there. So if you need more information, you can visit the website at jackson.sc.gov/hookandcook. The local hiker right over here in Spartanburg, South Carolina, they have a lot going on. And from time to time, I get their little emails of events going on. And on November the 7th, 10 a.m., they're going to have a Leave No Trace workshop with some instructors all the way from Boulder, Colorado. They're also going to have a guest speaker at the event, Jennifer Davis. She's the female record holder for completing the Appalachian Trail in 46 days. So that's over the local hiker there in downtown on Main Street in Spartanburg on November the 7th, 10 o'clock. Neat little store. You ought to go in there and check them out. Two nice people that run it. Talked to them several times, so do that. Back down to the coast, you got a Hooked on Charity Inshore Fishing Tournament, Bohicket Marina, November the 7th. It's for a great cause, benefiting the Hollings Cancer Center at MUSC's Medical Center for Breast Cancer Research and support for people locally who are living this fight. And, you know, I started thinking about this. I believe 1985, 2015, 20, how many years is that? 30 years since my mom had breast cancer. So congratulations, Mom. We've been fortunate to have you around all those years. But, you know, there's a lot of breast cancer survivors out there, and they need all the research help they can get. So here's one. Go fishing for a good cause and help find a cure for breast cancer. Glendale Outdoor Leadership over in Spartanburg, South Carolina, is going to have a fall foliage paddle trip November the 7th. This is going to be up on Lake Jocassee. It's a guided paddle trip on the crystal clear waters of Lake Jocassee during the fall foliage change, visiting white waterfalls and other waterfalls along the lake. The cost is $15 to participate. If you need a kayak and equipment, you can rent that for $10. If you need more information, email Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at setgols.org, or call him 864-529-0259. Photography Day at the Center for Birds of Prey. Now, I don't know if many people know, but down in Allendaw, South Carolina, there's an avian conservation center down there for birds of prey. They're having a photography day where you can go and take close-up pictures of live birds of prey in natural settings, take a self-guided tour of the center, and they have some flight demonstrations. So a good thing for you to do, 8:30 a.m. for 3 hours to 11:30. It's $36 per photographer, $12 for observers. You can visit their website. But the dates are November the 8th, 2015. They're also going to have another one on December the 13th. That's Seawee Road off Highway 17 in Allendaw, South Carolina. I got some great pictures of some of them down at the Southeastern Wildlife Expo last year. Can't wait to get back down to that. That's going to be in February. But Center of Birds of Prey, go take some pictures. Come back, got just a couple more, and then we'll get on to the show this week. So hang on through the break. We'll be back on the other side. We'll be right back. welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I can't believe I just did that. I just opened up another file when I needed the file I had open. Oh, well. You know, look, if you're in the woods deer hunting right now, I hope you're not like I was last week. The acorns were raining, and I spent half the time I was in the tree stand cowering because they were coming down so close. I mean, these are as big as the end of your thumb. These white oak acorns out there this year are incredibly big. I know a lot of us are out there deer hunting, and I hope we're being safe. I know we've had a couple of accidents, which never should happen. But, yeah, boy, the acorns were, they were just, it was like rain in the woods this past week. And let me tell you, I don't know what it is about an acorn just falling 5 or 6 feet above you. It hurts. So if you're out there and you're getting rained on today, well, just grin and bear it. The deer love it. Oh, my goodness, the deer have been just wailing on the acorns around our farm. I had one more thing for the calendar, just a family fun historical thing. The 45th Annual Revolutionary War Field Days are going to be held in Camden, South Carolina, November the 8th, 7th and 8th, from 10 to 5 daily. 500 reenactors interpret life on the Southern Campaign Trail. At 1:30 p.m., the cannons roar as Redcoats and Patriots portray Southern Campaign battle tactics on an expanded battlefield in the lower grounds of the museum, followed by military courts martial scenarios. You can watch craftsmen ply their trades. Civilian interpreters will be there to share the lifestyles as you stroll through the camp. There's 17 nifty shops in Sutler's Row, and lots of hands-on activities for kids and really for all ages. They don't have the 2015 schedule, but they did have the 2014 up here. Artillery demonstrations, war in the backcountry round table, pay call, tavern tales, a battle tactic skirmish, kids' colonial games, fife and drum, kids' enlistment in the King's Army. There you go. You want to get rid of your kids, enlist them in the Revolution. Just some really good things for you as a family to do. So, again, these are just a few of the things out there. If you log on to any website like SCIWA, a lot of the area Chamber of Commerce's, there's tons of stuff going on out there. So, get out there. It's fall. It doesn't matter if you hunt, fish, hike, camp, go to a barbecue cook-off. Do it as a family. Turn off everything and do it as a family. No, I don't want to know what's happening with the Clemson game. Sorry. Oysters. We were talking about oysters just a minute, and I wanted to continue with that. You know, oyster season was set to open up October the 1st. We had the floods come. They shut it down just a few days after it rained. And they really don't know when it's going to open back up. The article here from the, I believe it's from the Charleston City Paper, closes 2 days after it began because oysters filter. Oysters and clam, they filter water, and that's why when you have a lot of wastewater rain runoff, DHEC doesn't want you. So DHEC actually shut it down a couple of days after it rained on Saturday, October 3rd. And the David Ballinger is with DHEC. He said he doesn't know when it's going to open back up. They're taking water sampling. Indicates that bacteria levels are suitable for harvesting to resume. He said, but flooding in Columbia and beyond cascading the streams and rivers, and I understand there's still some places over in the Little the Blacks River area that are still flooded. You know, you really don't want to eat those oysters. You have to wait for the rivers to drop, and it's taken a toll on the area watermen. Charleston Oyster Company owner Jeff Sparr says, you know, it's put me out of business. He supplies a lot of local Charleston restaurants with local oysters. And he said, you can't go out and harvest them. You can't do anything. He said he's trying to make up by crabbing a little more. But, you know, for the short term, we're done. I assume DHEC will send out a press release when they open it back up. And I actually went to the DHEC website to try to find when that would be. And of course, they've got no postings up right now. They got a phone number, but of course, I didn't call that. But it gave a little interesting here, procedures for area closures, openings. Open shellfish areas will be closed upon actual receipt of a 24-hour rainfall total of 4 inches or more. So that's their criteria. And, you know, we pretty much got it. It's a closure for a minimum of 14 days. And until they have water testings that say it's safe for us to consume oysters, they're going to stay closed. And that's a crying shame because I love oysters, especially our local ones. And saying all of that, I wanted to, when oyster season does open back up, South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, of course, always has the oyster recycling. And I wanted to go through a little bit of this and why we need to recycle these oyster shells. Although South Carolina's commercial shellfish harvest has remained stable over the past three decades, the closing of oyster canneries and most shucking houses during this period has resulted in a shortage of shucked oyster shells needed to cultivate and restore oyster beds. You take the old shells and they grow new oysters. The increasing popularity of backyard oyster roasts and by-the-bushel retail sales have contributed to this shortage in that, contrary to the shucking houses and canneries, shells remaining from individual oyster roasts are not usually returned to the estuary to provide a suitable surface to attract juvenile oysters. More often than not, the shell ends up in driveways and landfills. We've all seen that. These factors have contributed to the critical shortage of oyster shell used for planting purposes and sustaining oyster habitat. The state's been forced to purchase the majority of its oyster shells from out-of-state processors to supplement our stocks of shell for planting. In order for SCDNR to manage the state's shellfish resources and maintain these critical habitats, we must continue to maximize our efforts to recycle our oyster shells. Oysters, a seafood delicacy, and it's a harvestable and renewable resource. Each year, tens of thousands of bushels are harvested recreationally and commercially. They're the estuarine filters. Adult oysters, man, my tongue is just getting in the way today. Adult oysters filter up to 2.5 gallons of water per hour, or up to 50 gallons per day. Habitat oysters build reefs, which provide habitat for fish, shrimp, crabs, and other animals. And if you've ever fished the low country, one of the best places to fish is an oyster rake. They're an integral part of the marine ecosystem. There are nearly 120 different species that frequent oyster reefs, including red drum, blue crabs, flounder, and shrimp. Erosion control. Oyster reefs are natural breakwaters that absorb wave energy and protect marsh shorelines from erosion. So how does the oyster recycling process work? During the summer months, oysters spawn and release free-swimming larvae called spat into the water column. There you go. If you've learned anything from today, now you know what that means. The spat are carried by tide and current, and after spending about 2 weeks building and moving in the water column, seek a suitable surface upon which to attach and begin building their shells of calcium carbonate. Unless disturbed, they will spend the remainder of their life cycle where they have attached. Centuries of oyster cultivation experience have proven oyster shell to be one of the most desirable materials for attachment and subsequent growth of young oysters. Other materials such as shucked whelk shells and wooden stakes have been very successful in attracting supporting oysters. And you'll see that if a lot of times when you're in the shallows where you have a stake marking a little channel, I'm thinking specifically back up in Gray Bay, where you have entrance into the flats from the main river channel, you have some stakes there, and sure enough, you'll have some oysters growing up to probably the mid-high tide line, maybe not that quite that high, but they will. But recycling do's and don'ts. Do separate shells from the trash. In other words, don't mix your shells in with your paper products or whatever. And if you've ever seen an oyster table, it's essentially a 4x8 sheet of plywood. You cut a hole in the middle, you put a 55-gallon drum underneath, and all your oyster shells goes in that. Makes it really easy to recycle those shells. Do dump the shells from bags or containers and leave only shells in the bins. Do bring your shell to the nearest shell recycler. And there's a map here in South Carolina of where you can take them. There's, Florence, Walterboro, of course, up and down the South Carolina coast from Myrtle Beach, Merle's Inlet, Georgetown, McClellanville, about 8 or 9 places between Garris Landing, Goose Creek, John's Island down that way, Edisto, and then 5 or 6 places around Beaufort and St. Helena. Don't put live oysters in South Carolina waters. And that's when you go oyster picking, you cull in place. In other words, you knock off everything you're not going to take right there in the water. Don't take them out and then put them back in. Don't put freshly shucked oyster shells in South Carolina waters. And a lot of people try to do this. They say they actually need about 6 months to quarantine those oyster shells to make sure there's no contamination in them before they, and they actually sack them up in bags and then replant them. And it's a really neat operation. And I've watched it. I've watched them sacking them before. But anyway, that's a little bit with oysters. I saw those and said, you know what? Just doesn't seem right not to have South Carolina oysters. But anyway, we're going to keep an eye out for when they're going to open the oyster season back up. And hopefully we'll have those local oyster roasts back on. I guess so we're getting some good oysters. And there's tons of oysters out there. We have an oyster roast in Charleston every year in January. And there's singles, there's clusters, and you bring them in from all over. And I've had about 10 different kind of oysters. Some of them will actually cover up a saltine cracker, just dwarf it. But anyway, I love oysters. I've talked on this show before about having a good pair of binoculars. And I think every household ought to have one. To get close to the action and really see what's going on, you need. And this comes in for this time of the year because of the Caesar's Head Hawk Watch. And this is from the Greenville County Bird Club. It's a good article. I've never been up there. I need to go up there and do it one year. But from early September through late November of each year, you can go to Caesar's Head State Park and do the Hawk Watch. It says here, the Hawk Watch is normally manned by volunteers who call themselves wing nuts. I'll let your imagination go wild there. But it came about one day, a few years ago, as a group was scanning the skies with binoculars, some of the tourists who came to the park to enjoy the view were hard to explain. That's just a bunch of wing nuts. The name stuck. More than 10,000 acres of prime mountain habitat are protected by a complex of state parks known as the Mountain Bridge Wilderness up in northern Greenville County. One of the state parks in there is Caesar's Head. Most of us have driven by there and have not stopped and looked. But the Caesar's Head Hawk Watch program was initiated by and is managed by Irvin Pitts, a resource management biologist with the State Park Service. And he just noticed that lots of hawks like to ride those currents on the south-facing escarpments. He said, on a good day in September, hundreds, even thousands of raptors may be seen passing through. It's not unusual to see 200 to 300 hawks at one time soaring or circling in a thermal overhead. This phenomenon is referred to as kettling or a kettle of hawks. To date, get this, the highest single day count was over 5,200 birds. The majority of the fall count consists of broadwing hawks, but other species occur, including bald eagles, ospreys, sharp-shinned hawk, Cooper's hawk, Merlin, American kestrel, Mississippi kite, turkey vulture, and black vultures. Even peregrine falcon is possible. Usually the local ravens are on hand to entertain the group, as well as other fall migrants such as warblers, hummingbirds, red-winged woodpeckers, and blue jays. Just an interesting thing to do. You know, the leaves are turning. Might be a good time to take off and go up along Highway 11, hit that turn off, go up to Caesar's Head. Make sure you have a good pair of binoculars. Now, I'm not talking a $40 or $50 pair. Look, if you can spend $40 or $50 to go out to eat one night, save about three nights of that. Go get you a good pair of binoculars. And I mean, I need to get my brother in on this. He is an optics genius. He reads, he knows it, he tests it all. You know, 150, 200 pair of Nikon loopholes. You just need them. Okay, come back. We're going to talk to Andy Wicker. He's a member of the Clemson bass fishing team when he was in college there. So hang through the break. We'll be back on the other side with the 2015 ABA champion. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Just a great song. Just got a good beat to it. Hey, I heard something the other day that maybe Hootie and Blowfish are getting back together and going to tour again. I'm sorry, I don't know who Darius Rucker is, but I know who Hootie is. Always be Hootie. You know, I spent yesterday down at Lake Hartwell with the I watched the launch and then hung out at the lake, watched them come back in. Didn't get to see the weigh-in, but I was there at the dinner last night, and another South Carolina angler has won another Championship here in South Carolina, and none other than Andy Wicker from Pomaria, South Carolina, is the 2015 American Fishing Tour champion. Andy, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. So it's still surreal, huh?
Yeah, it's still pretty surreal. I'm still sitting in the boat. I'm like, whose boat is this? But it'll sink in eventually, I'm sure.
Well, the big question I have to ask you now, who's happier about this boat, your brother or you?
Geez, I don't know. Maybe my whole family. My dad gets his truck and his boat back. My brother gets his boat back. So, you know, they're both happy for me for sure.
The funny story behind that is Andy fished this tournament using his dad's truck and his brother's boat. So both of them are ecstatic that he's got a boat of his own and a truck. Now, the question is, you got to just put a bunch of electronics on that thing, right?
Right. Yeah, I feel like I'm okay with electronics, and it's good stuff that comes on it, but I'm, you know, everybody gets used to their own preferences, and right. I have my preferences, but, you know, again, I have everything I want now. I mean, I didn't have a truck, I didn't have a boat, and I got a boat and a truck. It's a pretty awesome deal, man. It really is.
It is. Well, look, just give us a little history. When and how did you start fishing?
I got into it at a young age. My dad started bass fishing, I don't know, sometime middle part of his life, and I got into it 8, 9, 10 years old. Heck, I've been in it my whole life, and he took me around with some tournaments when I was real little with him. And I mean, okay. I can remember falling asleep halfway through a tournament and waking up. I mean, you know, they obviously weren't very big tournaments, but it got me exposed to it, and of course, it started a bug, and it took off from there, man. I started fishing some club stuff when I was little, and I got up to Clemson and actually joined the little club just to learn some lakes up there and fish for a little while, and eventually got into the Clemson fishing team and helped start that stuff. And, you know, it just started at a young age and took off from there.
What's your home? Would you consider Murray your home lake?
Yeah, Lake Murray's my home lake. I live like 25, 30 minutes from Billy Jeard. And that's where I grew up fishing, you know, where I cut my teeth and learned how to fish. And you know, again, that's another thing. You know, I didn't know anything about Hartwell when I went to Clemson for 5 years and got a civil engineering degree and minored in bass fishing. No, I'm just kidding. But I didn't know anything about fishing that clear water. You know, I grew up fishing Murray, power fishing stuff. And I got up in the Hartwell, and it's a clear, deep water reservoir. Didn't know anything about it, man. And made some awesome friends through that Clemson fishing team, some lifelong friends. And
sure.
We shared a lot of information. And my buddy Brandon Cobb and Reed McGinn, I mean, they really helped me get over clear water phobia and really taught me everything I know about fishing clear water. They really did. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't have won this tournament if it wasn't for all the friends and connections that I made up there. And you know, I'd like to think it was mutual. I've taught them a lot of stuff about Murray and some other stuff down a little farther south. So, you know, it's mutual and it works out. But I mean, hey, you know, that's the way the game works now, man. You got to have a few really good friends that you can trust and learn from and it worked out that way. So that's how I got into it.
And you got to have that trust before you start sharing information, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. This information nowadays spreads like wildfire, so definitely got to be cautious with that stuff.
Why the ABA? You know, a lot of kids you talk to in college fishing, I mean, they're ready to go the co-angler on the FLW Tour or do one of the lower series in the Bassmaster or FLW set. What made you pick the ABA?
I don't want to get ahead of myself. You know, I'm trying to stay humble on this thing. I don't know if I'm good enough to do anything more now, but I did a weekend series for a while and had some success in that. Just another branch of the weekend or ABA, you know, trails that they put on. And it was some local stuff around home. And, you know, I've been fishing those for a few years and I enjoy them. So, and then of course this year they're coming to Hartwell. So it was really a no brainer.
What, for the average guy here who just wants to enjoy weekend angling, ABA the place to go?
I think so. I mean, that's a great trail to fish, man. It's, you know, it's nothing crazy expensive. I mean, it's competitive enough to be fun, but not super competitive. You know, it's a fun trail to fish for sure. For somebody that's not serious enough to spend all the money and time that it takes to fish the BFLs and stuff like that, you know, it's a perfect scenario.
What thought just left me? That's not good. You know, I saw all sorts of things at the ramp the other morning. You saw, you know, relatively newer bass boats. You saw aluminum boats. You saw some probably late 70s, early 80s boats. And these are, what, 300 anglers from all across the United States was here this week?
Right. Yeah, it was a bunch. It was probably, yeah, it was about 300.
And you saw, and you knew these guys were the guys who had a job during the week, but they pretty much lived that week to get through to Saturdays to go fishing. That's kind of what I take away from this tournament.
Yeah, it is. I mean, everyone that fishes that trail is in the same situation. You know, we all work, and everyone I'm sure had to take a week off work, which probably isn't an easy thing to do for most people. And you know, so it's just a trail that just anybody can fish. And I mean, that's me. I mean, I'm just any average person going fishing and got lucky and come out with a new boat and a new truck, man. Awesome stuff.
Well, let's talk about that luck a little bit. Day one, okay. I didn't get down to any of the stuff before yesterday. So take me through what was your day one like, and then we'll talk a little bit about day two, which was where you really won it on day two. Mm-hmm. What was day one like for you?
Breaking, man. I didn't make my first cast until like 10:48. We had a fog delay, and that fog was thick and took forever to get off the water.
Okay.
And I ran up and fish some shallow stuff. I got bit shallow. In practice, I knew I could catch a limit out deep, drop shotting the spotted bass around brush piles, and I wanted to start off and try to catch a kicker. And I went up there and I caught like a 2-pounder, which ain't a big one, but I caught it shallow where I normally catch some decent fish. And I rolled with that for a long time, never got a bite. So I finally went back, and you know, I had a mentality. You know, I said I sure couldn't. I obviously didn't win it today, but I sure do not need to lose it today. And
yeah.
So I went some brush piles and drop shot up of almost a 9-pound limit and came in with that. You know, I wanted to be in contention for the second day. I knew I would have a late flight, which would mean an extra hour and a half of fishing time on the second day. And I was hoping to make a big jump on the second day. So that was my mindset in the first day once I got into the first day. And, you know, it didn't go as planned, but I got 9 pounds, and I didn't think it would be as high as it was, but ended up, you know, having me sitting in, like, 13th place.
Sure.
So. I was still in contention the first day. I didn't lose it, which was a big thing for me.
Okay.
Damn. And then the second day, I went out and had a late flight. It was nerve wracking watching 175 boats blast off in front of you when your boat 176. But I finally got in my spot, made my first cast, and nerves calmed down. And the second day was a lot like the first day. You know, I went shallow, tried to catch a big one, didn't work, and I went and caught a limit. I had 8 or 9 pounds again with my drop shot fish. And I got fortunate and caught a good 3.5-pound largemouth shallow.
Okay.
So this is after I lost like a 4-pound. I could have won this tournament by a little bit more. I lost some key fish during the tournament I really thought was going to cost me a turn. But I lost one. It gave me confidence to play shallow. I kept doing it, and I didn't have a check-in time of 4:30. So
they're
like 3:40, 3:44, something like that. Right there. And start going down the bank, and I catch that giant. It was like a 6.5-pounder.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest fish I've ever caught on the lake, and there's no doubt that fish won the tournament for me. And but I could not have caught that fish had I not had that last fight. But I knew that the shallow light would get better during the day. And you know, it just worked out for me. So and that's how the second day went. I came in and had like 15 pounds and jumped into the lead. And I was leading by like 2 pounds after the second day. So I knew that at that point, all I needed to do was catch a 9, 10, 11-pound limit, and I'd be tough to beat. I mean, I still had the mentality, let's catch my limit, put a ball in the air court. And then if I could catch a big one with limited time on the bank, that would, you know, it'd be icing on the cake, and it might seal the deal for me. But I went out the third day and did that. You know, I caught my limit. I had 8 or 9 pounds and finally called up a couple of little ones and got up to the – I think I weighed in 10 and a quarter pounds on the final day. And I never did get a big bite shallow. You know, all those came out of I caught two schooling, you know, got fortunate to come up schooling. I caught two of my keepers schooling, and I caught several other keepers that were, you know, smaller pound and a half fish, but very crucial keepers out of those brush piles on a drop shot. And I came in with 10 pounds, and I felt, I mean, when you got a boat on the line, you never feel comfortable unless you have a big bag. But,
right.
I mean, I felt okay with the ball in their court. I mean, because the guys that were behind me were strictly chasing drop shot, schooling Okay. He went fish, whereas I had a shallow deal. You know, I could catch one or two kickers a day. That kind of, and that's what the separation was from the rest of the field. So I knew that those guys are going to have a hard time catching over 10, 11 pounds. So that made me feel a little more comfortable. But you know, obviously not a lot with that much on the line.
Well, it worked out.
It worked out. I came in with 10 pounds, and it was enough to bring home a boat and a truck. So, good deal.
And I saw just a little bit of the weigh-in. They kind of kept you hanging there for a few minutes, didn't they? Kept telling you they had a couple more bags. Hey, a couple more bags out there. And
yeah, I guess they decided I was young and healthy and wanted to give me a hard time, I guess.
Well, look, congratulations. You got a brand new TR21. What has it got, a 250 horsepower Optimax on it?
Yeah, it's got a 250 Mercury Pro XS, man. That's the only motor out there.
Yeah. And so what's next? You just going to keep working and keep fishing ABA?
Yeah, I'm going to fish the ABAs. And, you know, I fish a bunch of stuff, man. I fish a bunch of local tournaments and fish cats and some the Carolina Bass Challenge. And I will probably end up fishing the BFLs and the weekend series, or what's now the new weekend series. And of course, I'll probably keep fishing ABAs, man. I'll keep doing, stay as active as I can, because, I mean, I love it, man. It's an addiction for sure.
It is.
You know, once you do anything competitive, you know, in high school it was sports and football and baseball, but now it's tournament bass fishing, man. It's the competitive bug is definitely addictive.
Very good. Well, congratulations. Catch up to you a little bit later on, maybe.
Hey, we can definitely do that.
Good enough. Well, enjoy that boat. Make sure you clean your brother's boat before you take it back to him.
Yeah, we were actually there earlier today separating some stuff, so I was doing some favors for him over at his house earlier.
Very good. Well, I enjoyed meeting you and your mom and your brother, and I'll catch up to you later on down the road.
Okay, man. Sounds good.
Thanks, Andy.
I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. There it was, Andy Wicker, 2015 American Fishing Tour champion. Just a working man's tour. I think they're normal $70 entry fees. And they give some good prizes away at those weigh-ins. Plus, you know, gave away 3 boats and 3 trucks last night. So, anyway, hang on. We'll be back to wrap up another week on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Before I forget about it. You know, there's lots of lots of people predicting the best day to be in the woods deer hunting, you know, it's funny because everybody's got their opinion, but according to besttimestohunt.net, and when you pull it up, it's a website. When you pull it up, it's actually set to Beverly Hills, California. I really don't know who deer hunts in Beverly Hills, California. But that's where it defaults to. It says that Tuesday, October the 27th, is the season's best. Now, it's actually for California. But if it gives you the option to run your own table. And when I do the one for Greer, which is 29651, it does say Tuesday, even with that full moon, is one of the best days to be in the woods this year. And normally, I don't like to hunt full moons. I just seem to stay inside and get back to where it's, you know, when the sun goes down, it's dark. It's not just daylight and black and white. But it does say next Tuesday is the day to be in the woods. So guess where I'm trying to be next Tuesday. Although I don't know. One of these years I'm actually going to keep records of when I see deer, and I'm going to compare them to the solunar tables. I mean, like I said, I don't get to go enough anymore to where I can time it around. I just, when I have time and am free, I go. But anyway, it does say next Tuesday. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see if I can get away and go for a few hours next Tuesday to see if next Tuesday is the best day out there. Coyotes. We're trying to implement some new deer hunting regulations in South Carolina. And it's, man, the reactions you get are just, they're something else, whether for or against. Doesn't seem anybody's in the middle of this road on this one. But coyotes are one of the reasons that, you know, really our deer population has taken a beating, and there's lots of studies out there to, you know, show how they prey on fawns, especially in the first 6 weeks of a fawn's life. We've had Dr. John Kilgo from the USDA at Savannah River on the show talking about that very thing. There was a story out of Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Now, you wouldn't think Mount Pleasant, you know, pretty developed place, Patriots Point and all. Mount Pleasant is having a huge coyote problem right now. This was a story from September 24th off News 2 down in Charleston, South Carolina. And it talks about homeowners in Mount Pleasant say they're scared and very concerned as an increasing number of coyotes have been spotted roaming the streets and killing their pets. One lady says she lived in the Brickyard Plantation for 20 years and never seen coyotes before last month. And she let her dog out, and it started running around with a coyote. Said sightings were, first there were just sightings, but now pets are really are going missing. Said there's lots of posters of missing cats and missing dogs, and, you know, it's a problem. It really is, because when coyotes, and they learn to live in these subdivisions, I mean, you've heard them howling at night. Any time a siren goes off somewhere, you'll hear those coyotes start howling most of the time. And we've all heard them, and they're, you know, since seen downtown Greenville, pretty much anywhere in South Carolina you can see a coyote, you've seen one. They've been there. And that was just a kind of a segue into talking about the deer. You know, we need to take into account the coyotes are having an impact on our deer population. And it was a coyote facts sheet that I ran across. The largest coyote ever recorded was 75 pounds, 5'7" in length. I'm pretty sure that was probably up north somewhere. Coyotes can run almost 40 miles an hour, can jump an 8-foot fence. Coyotes can have up to 19 pups in each litter. They're the most rapidly reproducing predator species. Coyote pups in urban areas have a survival rate 5 times higher than pups in rural areas, which tells you they're going to go, they're going to be more popular, the population is going to be more in these areas where they don't have any natural enemies, like out in the farms and fields and woods. In 2009 study from a group of coyotes that were tracked from November the 5th to February the 6th, the breakdown of a coyote's diet was found to be, and this wasn't in, this was before the SRS studies and all, 42% cats. That's pretty, this is from huntforthetruth.org. 42% cats, unidentified 33%, and then it goes to, and they even eat fruit. In 2004, in one state, 135,000 sheep lost to coyotes. Financial loss, $10.7 million. Coyotes are presently the most abundant livestock predators in Western North America. There are 19 recognized subspecies of coyotes, and coyotes will breed with dogs. And that's why you get the color variations, the black. Coyote-human encounters. Despite extensive population control efforts, trapping, shooting, whatever, the coyote is one of the few medium to large-sized animals that has enlarged its range since human encroachment began. 111 attacks have been documented between 77 and 2004. Number of individuals injured, 136. 64% of attacks were adults who were injured by coyotes. The number of human safety incidents where coyotes aggressively approached a human or stalked a small child was 62. And 79% of these attacks have been documented in the span of 10 years, indicating that this problem is increasing. So for you, I guess for you, those of you in suburban areas, you know, outdoor pets, be careful with them. You know, bring them in at night if you can. You know, if you're a hunter, and I know a lot of deer hunting clubs have these rules, you shoot the coyote before you shoot the deer. In other words, you're in the stand and coyote comes through before you're 5 minutes into your deer hunt, you shoot the coyote. Especially we need to be out there. If you can't trap them, and Pete Rogers lives right here in the upstate of South Carolina. He's a trapper for the USDA. He and I are going to go, when trapping season starts, we're going to run a trap line together. He'll be on the show to try to help us figure out a little bit more how we can. We're not going to be full-time trappers because we all have jobs. But weekend trappers, when you can go to the club, do a day, a night, the next morning, I'm going to try to help you learn how to trap a coyote because we need to. If you don't want to trap a coyote and you're not going to shoot them during deer season, then the months of April, May, and June, you need to be at your hunt clubs or your farms or wherever shooting as many of them as you can. Because that's the time when they're leading up to their pups being born. So they've got to be out looking for more food. That's the same time does are dropping fawns. So the coyotes are more exposed, which makes them easier to get to. And at the same time, you're giving those fawns, you know, they need 6 weeks. Survival rate of a fawn after 6 weeks is a lot better than ones that, you know, before that 6 weeks. I don't know whether it's a getaway or what, how that works, but that's just what studies have shown. So, and I know it's funny though, and how many years I've been out in the outdoors. I mean, I've heard them. I have never seen a coyote from a deer stand. I have seen a couple of coyotes from the house in Chester, but I just don't see any. But boy, I tell you what, if you're in tune with any of these deer hunting groups on Facebook, they're taking a pounding from deer hunters, and they need to be. And there's just some facts on coyotes. Let's see. I had a couple more notes here that I wanted to cover. I was in Anderson for the ABA tournament, and Neil Paul from Visit Anderson does a great job with bringing fishing tournaments into Green Pond Landing. We ate at Mr. River's Breakfast Joint. If you are down in Anderson on Main Street and want a good place to go eat breakfast, go to Mr. River's Breakfast Joint. And I don't know if they have it every day. Yesterday they had what my wife makes and what we call it's a breakfast casserole. It's, you know, eggs and she makes it in a pan. This was actually done like in a little souffle with sausage and eggs and, you know, they had bacon gravy. Let me tell you what, you could have drunk the bacon gravy for breakfast. It was so good. So if you're in Anderson, you know, go by. They had really, really good regular breakfast, but boy, the bacon gravy was something else. I wanted to end today, and there's lots more I didn't get to. One other thing, you know, wear your orange. If you're outdoors, you're going hiking, camping, whatever, it's a good idea to wear something orange. It's not a fashion statement. It's to keep you safe, especially if you're on any kind of the wildlife managed areas here in South Carolina. But in this whole deer hunting discussion that we're having right now, you hear a lot of I don't want to be limited to what I can shoot. And if I want to shoot it, I'm going to shoot it. There's a gulf between what people consider the trophy hunters and the subsistence guys who are, you know, eating whatever they kill, which is where I place myself. I don't shoot anything I don't eat. And I wanted to read this for you. It's from one of my favorite authors, Robert Rourke. We're going to give the man, Chuck Norris, a break this week because I want you to listen to this and I want you to think about it for a second. A sportsman is a gentleman first, but a sportsman basically is a man who kills what he needs, whether it's a fish or a bird or an animal, or what he wants for a special reason, but he never kills anything just to kill it. And he tries to preserve the very same thing that he kills a little bit from time to time. Robert Rourke, the old man and the boy. Hey, look, I've enjoyed it. Y'all have a good week. Get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Be careful and don't forget that camera. See you next week.